Football Weekly.
In the scope today, Villa tear up the form book like a schoolboy on too much Sunny D, etc. A 2-0 win over bipolar Arsenal and the race for fourth is back on. Sunderland win, but Roy's ready to go walkies, and we're not talking trigs. And there's horror at the cottage as a poorly trained octopus makes Spurs feel suckers. Elsewhere, we've news from Spain with another defeat for Real Madrid. Germany, it's emptor caveat, beware buyer. And Italy, the Rome derby and a massive live TV post-game bust-up that doesn't involve Jose Mourinho. Plus, Gerrard, John Terry, etc. all pulling up injured. Must be an England friendly week. Rafael Honigstein's along to tell us about England's clash with Germany, and Marcelo Moro Araujo will be talking Maradona. All that in a packed to the rafters Football Weekly. Hello, everybody on board today. Rafael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
Hi, Rafael.
Hi.
Guten Tag. Guten Morgen.
Yeah, Morgen. Yeah.
Barry Glendening.
Do you good? Now greet me in Irish. Let's see what you're made of.
1-0 to Glendening.
Already.
a
reducer in their early doors, just to show you who's boss.
Paul Doyle.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
Nice. Anyway, let's start off with the big Premier League story of the weekend. And it took place at the Emirates. Arsenal's 2-0 defeat to Aston Villa. I'm getting a bit dizzy here because 1 week ago, Wenger was a cranky old obsessive. Then he became the future of football with his young Gunners side. And now, where are we now?
Are you saying he's jumped the shark again?
He's jumped back over it. Yeah. But with Arsenal, but what happened?
Well, they were just beaten fair and square. Should probably have been beaten by more. It was teed up nicely for an Arsenal cock-up because they'd sort of given everyone the finger. Actually, we're really good after all by beating Manchester United in a game that could have gone either way. So it's not, they weren't vastly superior to United or anything. They just took their chances or took more chances. And then their kids went out and put on quite a show against pretty much full strength Wigan. So it was all nicely poised for them to get beaten by Villa, and they duly did. I mean, I think I said last week, it depends on which Villa turns up, depends on which Arsenal turns up, and it was good Villa against very mediocre Arsenal.
Well, Paolo Mendini was certainly complaining about Arsenal's attitude, the attitude of the players, but Villa deserve a lot of credit because they were astonishing, no?
They were very good, and they couldn't live. Arsenal couldn't live with Agbonlahor. He was really tremendous, and that sort of outlet against Arsenal is very important, and they struggled to pick up his running, and Villa looked very sharp, and I was still surprised, I have to say, because usually Arsenal lose against rubbish sides, but Villa were actually really good, and that's why it was a surprise to me. I think Barry's right, there was a huge overreaction last week when they beat United. If you look back upon the last 3 years when they haven't won any titles, they've always had fairly decent performances, sometimes even great against the top sides, but then of course gone to lose at really mediocre places and against bad teams. In that respect, nothing's changed much, I think, with the difference that this time Villa were actually really good.
Yeah, Arsenal, by the way, have already lost more games this season than they did in the whole of the last campaign.
Right. I mean, fourth place is definitely there for the taking for Villa, but they seem to be bedeviled by a similar lack of consistency as Arsenal. They've thrown away, lost games they shouldn't have against Stoke and Newcastle, I think, this season. So they need to get a bit of consistency going, and they could certainly finish fourth.
So, well, all very surprised. They hadn't won away to Arsenal in 15 years. They were without John Carew.
But they hadn't lost away to Arsenal either, I think, in the last 3 years. So, you know, they were due a win.
Right. So you reckon the race for top four is back on? The two sides are level now on points, Arsenal and Aston Villa. Do we think Villa are going to have the consistency to challenge long term for the top four, Paul?
Well, no. They've been inconsistent so far this season, and there's nothing to suggest that will stop. Arsenal are as capable of finishing fifth as they are of finishing second. You know, they still remains the case that they can beat anyone.
Mm. So I guess
they
what
have
I'm asking,
a mental problem at the moment. I mean, everyone has been banging on about the lack of a leader on the pitch, which to motivate the lads when they think that they can just go out and drift through a game and win easily. And there seems to be a lack of a leader in the dressing room as well, because Wenger doesn't seem to be motivating his halftime team talk didn't have much effect at halftime on Saturday. So they need somebody to do something. I don't know who it will be.
I noticed that the bookies and now make Arsenal 9-4 not to make the top four at the end of the season. I don't know if that's a bet that you would find attractive. And Fabregas odds on to leave by the end
sad,
of the season.
The sad thing is, I think, that there is really no real big fifth team again. I mean, Villa...
So you don't think Villa are...
I don't think they can. I think especially with the UEFA Cup demands, even though it's not a very serious competition, not even for them, I think, it's still games that have to be played. And I don't think they have the squad to cope with it. And, you know, all the other usual suspects that we look to before the start of the season, they always seem to come short. And I think that is one that is Wenger's saving grace, because he doesn't seem to be coming under any real pressure and can go through another season of transition and look to the future yet again.
Yeah. In given how tight the Premiership is this season, the January transfer window would be more interesting than most years, you imagine.
Well, a very good point. I was just going to say, actually, I think Randy Lerner's already made noises about bringing in a couple more players if Martin O'Neill feels it's necessary, as you would imagine he would in just over a month when the January transfer window opens. Now, all the rest of the big 4-1, a brace for Nicolas Anelka, he's now got 8 in 4. A brace for Cristiano Ronaldo, who's now got 101, was it Premier League goals or Man United goals? Premier League?
Man United.
Man United goals, and he wants a new contract to celebrate that.
Does.
Of course. Spurs didn't win after, what is it, 6 games, 5 wins in that 4-4 comeback at the Emirates.
I love all this talk about Harry Redknapp, about the great transformation he's wrought there. Has been down to his man management qualities and how he puts an arm around the players and G's them up and everything. And did you hear his so-called vote of confidence for Gomez at the weekend? He said, "I'm stuck with him, I have no one else." That was his ringing endorsement. Yeah. Well, he could say
that's
he needs time to...
a ringing endorsement for the number two.
Yeah, exactly. Well, why not say he needs to adapt to English football or something? Right. He could come out with something more convincing than that, something more encouraging.
He has 3 goalkeepers there and 1 out on loan, Ben Olnik, and all 4 of them, basically. He said, they're all rubbish.
Yeah.
What can I do, you know?
It was an astonishing mistake, was it not, the Gomez one?
Well, it was, yeah, his confidence is obviously shot to bits, and I can understand how, you know, it's not going to improve anytime soon, you'd imagine. And other teams have cottoned on to his many shortcomings and, you know, tried to exploit them. So crowding him at crosses or when the ball's coming in from corners and that, because he just can't deal. It's astonishing, actually, how a top-flight goalkeeper is so bad at dealing with crosses. But it must be a touch of the vampires about him or something.
Indeed, so he did pull off 1 or 2 decent saves yesterday, but that shot from Johnson where he basically fails to gather it, bounces off his chest instead and spins into his own, not even spins into, just slides.
Not even a shot.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's sort of notorious as a good shot stopper, which to me always smacks of, you know, a goalkeeper who's not very good at anything else. You know, you just plant a tree on the line, that would be a good shot stopper.
Who are they going to buy in January?
Shea Given?
Yeah, you'd imagine that given what's going on at Newcastle at the moment, they might be able to get him for a good fee. I'd be surprised if... I wouldn't be surprised, but I think he belongs at a better club than either Newcastle or Spurs.
Well, as a player who appears to have no ambition whatsoever, I think going to a mid-table side would be the right move for him.
Now, Roy Keane... Barry and Sunderland. All sorts of excitement on Friday, as the odds on Roy walking out of the Stadium of Light shortened dramatically. I think the bookies ended up closing the book on that after it turned out that he hadn't got on the team bus to take him to the game at Blackburn. He did turn up for the game though. Sunderland got a win after 4 straight defeats.
Yeah,
they won. What's the situation now? Is he still?
Well, he said that it's complete nonsense that he was,
but it
threatening
wasn't.
To walk out. Well, we can only go on what he said, and he said that it was complete nonsense. I don't know if there's if he's lying. I presume he's telling the truth. Maybe he isn't. But he said the only walking he did on Friday was walking the famous Triggs, the dog. But he turned up on Saturday, and Sunderland went a goal down, came out Kenwyn Jones and Djibril Cisse scored the equaliser and winner, respectively, and Keane looked quite happy. Yeah. I mean, it's a measure, like Paul was saying, the Premier League is so tight that just that win managed to catapult them back up into mid-table, you know. So
it would be extraordinary if he did walk out. And of course, we can never rule that out given his past. But if he does want to make it as a manager, walking out in Sunderland would be a seriously bad move, because he's got such a great position for a novice manager there. He's got great backing from the board. Niall Quinn will never sack him unless he does something utterly crazy. He's got money to spend in January. They've got this new investor who joined the consortium there a few months back, the secretive American-Irish guy who's very wealthy. Quinn has said they will have money to spend in January. He's building his third team there in two years at the helm. Keane is, and it for a novice manager to have that latitude is brilliant. He won't get it anywhere else.
Do you think he didn't get on the bus because he wanted to fly business class instead?
No, with his past, especially the story is that Niall Quinn has privately admitted that he knows it's only a matter of time before Roy goes off on one about some issue or other and walks, and that's something that the club are prepared for. And it might not have been this weekend, but it will be one day soon.
But he showed no sign that he's going to go off on one anytime soon. I mean, I think he's doing a good job.
Mm.
He's made some very poor purchases. I mean, there's a website, a Sunderland fan site called A Love Supreme, which is quite good, but they have this feature where they follow all Sunderland's loan players and like their team of Sunderland loan players of the week, because they have about 13 or 14 players out on loan, all keen purchases that haven't worked out at the club. And he said himself that he's bought players he wanted, got them to the club, and within a couple of days gone, oh, you're not for me after all. But I suppose that's a risk you always take when you're buying players. Right. I mean, El Hadji Diouf is a disastrous purchase, and I think Keane seems to think he's sort of like Ailsa or Pippa on Home and Away. He can take in these charlatans and make them see the error of their ways, but, you know, he can't. It's not happening for him.
Okay, Roy Keane, not like Ailsa, Pippa in Home and Away. But
Ailsa and Pippa are two different people.
Oh, are they?
Well, actually, they're about five different people, because there was three or four Pippas.
Oh, really? They had different actresses?
Different actresses, yeah.
That's very disrespectful, I always feel, to the viewer. Don't you think?
Well, it's a bit odd, because it's like we're not going to notice.
Right. Was the previous series a dream or anything like that? Or
no.
How did they? Oh, okay.
I haven't watched Home and Away for a very long time.
Right. So. Well, Roy Keane's still leading the odds on being the next manager to leave his club. Mark Hughes next, after his 2-2 draw with Hull, followed by Megson. And a bit further down the list, I noticed with excitement, was whoever the next Newcastle manager is, even though he hasn't been appointed yet. Really well up there in the odds to go. And Zola, Paul, Ince, etc. Roy Keane, Mirka Barna posting in saying, is he Brian Robson for the noughties? Is he Brian Robson for the noughties?
I don't think so.
It's a bit harsh.
No.
Okay, quick word on Wigan and their 2-2 draw at Newcastle. Very impressive, this, without Emil Heskey and Amir Zaki. And nice to see Titus Bramble still costing the Magpies points, even though they've
funny.
Moved on.
It was nice to see Dave Whelan having a pop at Mike Ashley afterwards. Ashley has obviously never been forgiven for blowing the whistle on Whelan's little price-fixing scam.
Mm.
Well, Whelan accused Ashley of being greedy, which is fair enough, but it would carry more weight if it didn't come from someone who'd been fined £5.5 million for fixing the prices of replica shirts. Was it Ashley?
It was Ashley who blew the whistle after turning up for a meeting with the heads of all these sports companies to discuss prices. And Whelan originally wouldn't allow him entry because he was so scruffy he thought Ashley was the gardener. And then he came in and he said to Ashley, we're a club here in the north and you're not part of it. Shooed him out, and Ashley gave evidence to the price-fixing commission.
Whelan, who's head of one sportswear company, and Ashley
was the head of the other.
Another. Michael Owen, swinging and missing with you see that he missed one shot, then tried to kick the ball in frustration and missed that as well, which I thought was
little swinging Mickey.
And Joey Barton out for Paul. You were saying
eight weeks.
Shame.
That's not his parole deal. That's an injury. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. What's the injury?
Knee, neck. I think ligament damage.
All right. Before we finish our Premier League roundup, Barry, as a long-term admirer of Liverpool, you want to talk about their game with Bolton?
Well, they won, and they won easily, but there was another moment of controversy in the game when Rob Stiles disallowed what, on first impression, seemed to be a perfectly legitimate goal
It would have been an equaliser for Bolton when Liverpool
it would have been an equaliser, yeah, just before half time. And on Radio 5 Live, our old friend Alan Green was absolutely outraged at this perfectly good goal being disallowed. And the Sky Sports pundits thought it was a very brave decision by Stiles. And it was the correct decision by Stiles. But, oh, you don't think so?
I don't think so. I think if anybody should have been booked, it possibly would have been the goalkeeper, Pepe Reina. Bolton stick a couple of men in front of him when the ball's coming in. What is it, a free kick or a corner? I can't remember.
It was a corner,
right. Okay, so they stick a couple of men in front of him. And Reina, the most obvious thing in there, you can see that Kevin Nolan's kind of waving a leg around, but he doesn't really make contact with it. This is before the kick's actually taken. And Pepe Reina shoves him twice to get him out of the way, which you're not allowed to do.
Kevin Nolan was blocking his path to the ball, which you're not allowed to do.
You're not allowed to run through an opposition player.
If I could just
John Terry,
you're allowed to stand still.
Law 12.
No, curses.
You see, this is what bugs me. All these pundits and commentators waxing lyrical about poor refereeing when these same pundits and commentators don't actually know the rules of the game of football.
Let's hear
which
rule
is quite
12.
Astonishing considering a lot of them are former professional footballers. Law 12 states an indirect free kick is awarded to the opposing team if a player, in the opinion of the referee, impedes the progress of an opponent. And seeing as Kevin Nolan impeded the progress of Pepe Reina, then disallowing the goal was correct.
It's interesting because, of course, afterwards Benitez came out and said there's an international rule that the goalkeeper's protected in the six-yard box. No one here has heard of this, but it's actually true. When you look at the rules in many places on the continent, there's a small directive explaining that if a goalkeeper is appended or interfered with in a six-yard box, the referee should automatically consider it.
But if I'm standing there and the goalkeeper runs into me,
no, standing is fine. But if he was doing more. He raised his foot. He had his foot at one stage between Reina's feet. I don't know why, but it was there. And he was clearly blocking him off. He wasn't just standing there.
What was that directive? Purpose. If you upend the keeper in the 6 yard, that's fair enough.
No, sorry. If you interfere, if you challenge the keeper in a 6 yard box, it's an automatic.
What is the justification for that? That's ludicrous. The keeper already has the huge advantage of being able to use his hands.
No, Paul.
He wouldn't have that advantage if you had your way.
Yeah. No, I think he should be allowed to use his hands, of course. But
didn't you not propose on this very pod?
I said he shouldn't be allowed to catch it, but he can use his hands.
Oh, all right,
punch it clear with precision to a teammate.
Right.
It's a skill.
Well, I can't give you the reason for it, but what I can tell you, that is the whole root source of the Swiss banking scandal during Euro 2004. Because, of course, Urs Meyer, the John Terry against Portugal, interpreted the laws the way they are being interpreted in Europe, i.e. wrapping your arm around the keeper in the six-yard box is an automatic free kick, where everybody else was said, no, what, Terry didn't do anything wrong. He had a right to challenge the goalkeeper.
Saul Campbell, was it?
Campbell headed the goal.
Yeah.
Terry was...
Oh, you're right, yeah. And it was a foul. I mean, that even in English law, that's a foul.
No, the Times had a campaign saying evidence would have been...
They were blinded by jingoism.
So are you honestly saying that the rules of football are different in some parts of the world to how they
interpretations, are yes, interpretations. There is a directive. It's a subclause under the respective law. It exists in the German handbook, but doesn't in English. And that's exactly what Benitez is talking about. He says there's an international law. No one's heard about it here.
See,
but he's actually right.
Benitez was either talking through his hat or just had not phrased what he was trying to say very well.
He was agreeing with you, though.
But that's astonishing, surely, that... If there are different rules in different countries.
Jens Lehmann was making...
Like, you don't have different rules for tennis in different countries.
It's interpretations. Jens Lehmann was making the case for years. Obviously, he was laughed off. And one of the first things he said is, people don't know the rules of football here.
Hmm.
And he was referring directly to that specific case because he was used to not being challenged in a six-yard box.
Well, that's because it's not a rule here.
There you go. Well, we've certainly uncovered a real hornet's nest there. I tell you what, we do have to move on though. So let's dial up Sidlow in Spain for a bit of an international roundup after this.
Football Weekly from guardian.co.uk.
Now, it's welcome to Sidlow, who joins us on the line from Spain. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How's everyone there?
We're all well. Rafa has got a question he's itching to ask you.
After the Bolton game, Rafa Benitez was saying this would have also been a disallowed goal in Spain because there is a rule that you cannot challenge a keeper in a six-yard box. Is this true?
Well, the bottom line in Spain is you really can't challenge a keeper anywhere. Pretty much at any time a player goes near a goalkeeper, he gets the free kick. Even if the goalie comes out, fists flaying and punching opposing forwards, it's always him that gets the free kick. I think theoretically there is the rule that a shoulder charge is fair on the goalkeeper in the penalty area, but not the six-yard box. But the reality is that you go anywhere near a goalkeeper and he gets the foul anyway.
Very interesting, very interesting. Now, you've got plenty to tell us about, including yet more problems for those people, Real Madrid.
Yeah, they were really, really awful. They were beaten by Valladolid and they just played very, very badly. And the thing is, of course, it's a whole kind of, if you like, a whole cumulative effect of a whole load of very bad results for Real Madrid recently. Of course, they've been beaten twice by Juventus in the Champions League. They were knocked out of the Copa del Rey by a second division B side. And this weekend, they were beaten by Valladolid. Now, on the face of it, it's not that bad.
Valladolid, the team who you were telling us lost 6-0 at Barcelona the week before.
Widely far indeed, yeah, the team that lost 6-0 at Barcelona the week before. But it's different. I mean, to some extent, you're playing at the Camp Nou and playing at home against Real Madrid, not least because Widely's home record is actually pretty good this season. I think they've only lost once at home all season, and they're picking up a lot of points at home. But it wasn't so much the fact that Real Madrid lost as the way they lost and the kind of the sheer sort of inoperativeness of the way they were playing. And nothing came off for them. Nothing is coming off for them right now. And it's weird because, you know, for a lot of clubs, Real Madrid's current situation wouldn't be bad at all. I mean, they're 5 points off Barcelona, which is too many, of course. But they're not in too bad a shape. This is only their second defeat of the season. And if they'd won at the weekend, it would have been their best start ever at this stage of the season. But it's just that even when they're winning, they're just not convincing anyone. And then you add to that some of the internal problems. Schuster's no longer talking to his squad. People within the club are not talking to each other. And the whole thing...
Just to pull you up on that. Schuster's no longer talking to the squad.
He basically has, there's very, very little communication between him and the rest of the team. His ideas now are either not being conveyed or not being followed. Some of the players are privately saying that, you know, he just doesn't talk to us. We don't know what he wants. We don't know what to do. And the players are pretty much going on the pitch and kind of making it up as they go along. And there's really big institutional problems. There's lots and lots of people within the club who don't talk to each other. So, for example, you've got the director of football not talking to the sporting director. The president's relationship with the sporting director is weak. The sporting director's relationship with Schuster is very, very weak. The whole thing is a mess. And I think I've said to you before that Real Madrid have always been just two or three bad results away from a crisis. And the thing is, they're getting those bad results now. And this could be very messy. Schuster could well be on his way.
Sid, he's not talking to his players, you say, but has Schuster spoken to the media? I mean, has he given his side of the story? What's his explanation for why things aren't going well?
Well, this is one of the problems, and particularly for a club like Real Madrid, where so much of what they do is about the image. One of the big problems is that Schuster just doesn't convey anything, and he goes into press conferences and basically tries to start fights with journalists virtually every single time. And he doesn't give answers. He doesn't explain anything. He doesn't. He certainly doesn't convince anyone. I remember at the game at Almeria a couple of weeks ago, I was in the press room, and one of the journalists said to him, "Look, you can't be very happy about what you've seen out there." And Schuster turned around and said, "You can't possibly think like me. You're a journalist. I'm a coach." The journalist turned around and said, "Well, look, to be honest, I suspect I know what you're thinking, really." And Schuster turned around and said, "Well, I don't even know that." And although it was considered to be a joke, there was a real sense that, but hang on, he actually, when you watch the team play, you get the feeling that he doesn't know what he thinks.
Well, OK, Barcelona 5 points ahead of Real Madrid. They've got Villarreal in second place. Valencia, who are in third, lost at home to Sporting Gijón, who are now up to ninth. Those Sporting boys, they won't stop, will they? Barry's tittering now. It's over my pronunciation, isn't it, Barry?
Of Gijón, yes.
Go on, Steve.
Surely they, not Chievo, should be nicknamed the Flying Donkeys.
Well, indeed.
Well, if they really were called Gijón, then maybe they would be, yeah.
Well, how do you pronounce it, Sid?
Sporting Gijón. Gijón. Which is obviously not a
It's like a French donkey, isn't it? Right. We did have a poster, I think, last week, Sid, and I don't know if we ever put this to you, asking for the right pronunciation on a few Spanish names.
No.
Oh, sorry. I think Real Zaragoza was one of them. Could you do that one for us?
Well, you've just done that one perfectly.
Really?
Yeah.
I can pronounce most Spanish teams' names now, just from listening to Sid.
Right.
It's very educational.
What about, well, the one, Valladolid, how do you say
Valladolid.
That one?
Valladolid.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Osasuna.
Osasuna.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but you were putting in a lispy bit that doesn't exist.
Right.
That's in Barcelona.
Right. Okay. Gijón. That's right. Stop laughing, everyone. They.
You need to dredge up a pint of phlegm for the Gijón.
Gijón. All right then. Them. How are they doing? Ben. Sporting.
You can call them to Sporting. Why don't you Sporting? Sporting. That's much easier, yeah.
All right. But anyway, they really turned it around. Well done to them.
Yeah, they. I mean, obviously, we were talking about at the start of the season, they were in terrible trouble. They conceded 6 against Barcelona, 7 against Real Madrid. But obviously, the first 5 games, they were always likely to lose them because it was Villarreal, Sevilla, Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Getafe, the first game of the season. Now, they lost to Getafe, which is perhaps a little bit more disappointing. But then they went on a very good run. And we were, I mean, you know, when we were talking about this back then, I was saying that they looked awful at the back, but they did actually offer quite a bit going forward. And since then, I think what they've really done well is they've convinced themselves and the coach has done a good job in convincing the rest of the team that, look, it doesn't matter about losing those 4 games. That's not your league. Don't worry about it. When it comes to the other games, that's when we'll be measured. And since then, they've played brilliantly.
Well, excellent. Dr. Sid, many, many thanks for that roundup. We'll be speaking to you on Thursday, I hope.
Yeah, brilliant.
Have a super week.
I'll try. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Sid Lowe in Spain, Paul Doyle in Pod, Ligue 1. I noticed Lyon now streaking ahead.
Yeah, it was a bad weekend for anyone who wants an exciting title race, because although Bordeaux dominated at Stade Gerlon, Lyon beat Bordeaux 2-1 to open up a huge gap at the top. Also because Marseille, who whenever they get in striking distance of Lyon, they implode. Cool. And they did that at the weekend. They were 2-0 up at home to Lorient with 15 minutes to go, and they ended up losing 3-2. Courtesy of some very bad refereeing decisions, as admitted by the referee himself afterwards. But the big story in France this week is the call-up to the national squad of Steve Savidon, a 30-year-old who has never represented France at any level before that, who just 4 years ago wasn't even a professional footballer. He was playing part-time, as a semi-pro in non-league football, supplementing his income by working as a bin man. And now, after 3 very good seasons, 2 at Valenciennes and then this season at Caen after a summer transfer, he's in the national team squad.
I'm astonished by that, Paul. I'm trying to think of a precedent. I can't think of anyone.
It's a bit like Ian Wright's story, but Ian Wright wasn't that old.
Yeah. And it's great. I mean, just like a bit
like smokes
like
a chimney as well, doesn't he? I've heard.
I don't know, to be honest. I know that earlier in his 20s he had a lot of disciplinary issues. But I don't know if he smokes.
But he's really good, is he? He deserves to be there? It's not just that he has a good start. Yeah.
No, he himself has been calling for the last few weeks, pointing out that his strike record over the last 3 seasons has been as good as Benzema's. And he also chips in with a lot of assists because he does a lot more than... he's not just a fox in the box, although he is a brilliant finisher. He doesn't miss many chances.
Any bin men in the Germany side? Well, we'll be talking more about Germany and England a bit later on, Rafa. Tell us about the Bundesliga.
What do you want to know?
What do I want to know? Well, Bayer, Rudi Völler, general manager there, weren't they doing really disastrously and heading for relegation not so long ago?
They had a tough time under Skibber a couple of years ago.
All right. But now they're top of the league.
Now they're top of the league, and Bruno Labbadia was a very good player in his prime. And they're playing very good football, very good to watch. And they've had a very big result against Schalke, whom they beat 2-1 very convincingly. After suffering a sort of a typical Leverkusen reversal the week before when they were 3-0 up away to Karlsruhe and finished the game 3-3. Everybody was talking about the lack of bottle, etc. But now they followed up with a very good win, and it's them and Hoffenheim and Bayern only third, because Bayern for the third time this season threw away a 2-0 lead with 10 minutes to go. And, after 5 wins in a row, that had everybody saying, oh, Klinsmann, he's brilliant, here's the revolution. Of course, the headlines on Monday were Klinsmann is absolutely rubbish, and that result reveals why he's making all these mistakes. Yeah. And it's a very, very interesting, and it's a really exciting title race.
But Bayer Leverkusen have never won the German title. Are they realistic contenders this time, do you think?
I think they are, and part of the reason is because they are, of course, one of the few teams, one of the few decent teams not involved in Europe. 7 Bundesliga teams are playing in Europe this year. And Leverkusen and Hoffenheim, who by coincidence are top of the table on joint points, are both not involved. And perhaps that is certainly an explanation for their early good form. But also they have a host of really, really good young players. And I understand that their stadium was full of scouts, also from the Premier League, because they have lots of great players, also lots of great German players, a few of whom we'll see in action on Wednesday.
We'll talk more about that game later on. Barry, were you just shaping up to...
No, I just I thought Rafa was saying the stadium was full of scousers. What the hell were they doing there?
Well, Arcala had taken them on a trip. You're not familiar with... No, never mind. Never mind. Okay, tell you what. Paolo Bandini now beams aboard. Paolo, welcome back.
Hello.
Yep, second week. See how long this run can continue.
Baz has just made a reference off air to drummers in Spinal Tap, yeah. So I'm not hugely
an oldie,
confident.
But a goodie.
Yeah, indeed. Tell us first off about the Rome Derby, a victory for Roma.
Yeah, it was. It was a really important win for Roma, obviously, in the context of the season they've had so far. You know, it wasn't a classic game, I wouldn't say. The first half was very edgy. Both teams were very nervous. Not a lot of great chances, although Vucinic did have one header that was very well saved by Carito. In the end, Julio Baptista with the winning goal in the second half, and they managed to hold on to it.
A beauty from the beast, who's now playing. They've redesigned Roma's formation around him. He used to be this kind of one man up front, and now...
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think it's just around him. I think, you know, obviously for a couple of years now, they've been using this sort of strikerless, supposedly, 4-3-2-1, and 4-2-3-1, and that actually, you know, now that you've lost Mancini, you know, you've had injuries to players like Tadei, you know, Julie's not there anymore. There's a lot of players missing who might be able to fill in that bank of three behind them. You've had Vucinic playing out on the left, where I've never been convinced that he's, you know, as good there as he could be up front as a striker. And I think it's, you know, it's a pragmatic response as much as anything, but it does look like it's doing better than what they had before, because now you can move Vucinic up front alongside Totti in the two. He's playing a rhombus midfield with De Rossi sort of sitting deep, and Baptista always wants to play in that role at the front.
What's a rhombus midfield, please?
The diamond.
Yeah, it's a diamond. The Italians always refer to it as a rhombo. So I suppose like
you're fired.
That. A diamond.
We won't put up with that
rombo.
Kind of pretentiousness
in
here.
The fish.
The French refer to it as a lozenge.
Well, the turbot is called a rhombo because of its shape. It is quite clearly rhombo.
So it's named after a fish.
Yeah. Oh, no, the fish is named
it's
after.
Named
the
after.
Yeah, but the formation is after. Is named after.
Named after geometry.
Right. I'm moving on here. Okay, so that nice for Roma, who are beginning to creep up away from the danger zone. Yeah. Biggest matchup of the week, though, Paolo. Enrico Variali of Stadio Sprint against the Catania manager Walter Zenger. Tell us more.
Yeah, it was just a second week running, I guess, that we've had some fun and games with the post-game interviews. Last week, Zenger declined to show up for an interview after his team's... after his team won, it's escaping me now who they beat last week, but they won last week and he didn't show up for his post-game interview. And Variali was a bit put out by this all. And, they are actually supposed to buy...
They have a contract.
They're supposed to show up for these interviews. And he had a go at him and said, it's a bit rich given that, we saved him when everyone else had forgotten about him. We saved him and gave him a pundit's job because Zenger worked for a few years as a pundit at Rye.
He said, we pulled him out of the forgotten box.
There you go.
And Zenger got a bit offended about that.
He did. Zenger got very cheesed off and, told him to, mind his own business. And the exact words he ended up using were, you worry about your own family. And this, Variali then took as, oh, you're threatening me. And Zenger then sort of started getting very sarcastic on the job, and they sort of stood there basically trying to talk over each other for about 3 minutes while...
A bit like us doing the Italian coverage,
Indeed.
Similar. But I loved it because the other... what's his name? Gentile, one of the other... not Claudio,
yeah, it was
Bruno
Gentile was there, sort of just kept saying, well, yeah, let's just talk
everyone.
About football, let's calm down.
So,
and they
so then
him.
Zenger says, oh, yeah, you stop it, Variali. And then Variali says, no, you stop it. And they go back and forth like this for about 60 seconds. Yeah. And Variali banging on about threats. And then saying, you came charging at me like you did against Argentina when you cost us the World Cup, Zenger. Because he was, of course, the Italy goalkeeper in the semi-final.
Absolutely.
Back in 1990. Ah, oh, magnificent. And, there you go. Catania doing very well, though.
Yeah, they're up to seventh, 3-2 win over Torino this weekend. Mascara got a hat-trick. He's playing well at the moment. I mean, they've just, he's...
Gave the opposition a black eye.
Couldn't make it up.
He's done a good job since getting there, Zenger, which is funny because a couple of weeks ago, actually, he was saying, I might quit because some of the fans were getting on his back after, a couple of slightly iffy results. And, then now you look at it in their seventh and you're sort of wondering how a team with, Catania's previous can be at all disappointed with how he's done.
Although they do often have these bright starts to season, as Zenger himself
admits.
Is he
on the eye, Mascara?
yes. There you go. Did you
Does
say
he
you
run
couldn't
a
make
lot?
It up? You did. You couldn't make it up. Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. Does he run a lot? Yeah. But he lashes them in when he gets when he gets the chance. And 3 goals for him this week. He's now on the same goals. You probably mentioned this, Paolo, as Ibrahimovic, who scored 2 in belters.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Fantastic strikes from Ibrahimovic, both of them, who instantly came out and, not for the first time this season, said, I should win the Ballon d'Or. he's quite strong on this point. No one else outside Italy is particularly talking about it, but in Italy they're all quite convinced. I mean, I think the problem for Ibrahimovic was and always will be that he doesn't score enough in the Champions League, and until he starts doing that, or at least not in the big Champions League games.
Or for Sweden.
Or indeed for Sweden, ever. And until he starts doing that, then I don't think outside of Italy people are going to take him very seriously.
Well, an impressive away win for Inter, who stayed top thanks to that 2-0 in Palermo. Milan just behind them after yet another soft penalty in their 1-0 win over Chievo. Juve won their 7th straight. Very impressive result Thursday night, beating Genoa. Highly rated Genoa 4-2. And Juve will be playing Inter at the San Siro next Saturday, Paolo. That'll be very interesting, won't it?
Yeah, it should be a fantastic game. Mourinho sort of said before their game this weekend against Palermo, because Juventus were top briefly because they played on Thursday. Mourinho came out and said, well, I think we'll be top by the end of Sunday. And he said, I think we'll be the top at the end of next Sunday as well. So he's already stoking the fire. He's obviously not a big fan of Ranieri.
Well,
so.
Two former Chelsea managers. And, of course, Mourinho's first act on arriving in Italy was to rubbish Ranieri and call him a 17-year-old has-been who's never won anything and never will.
I don't think he said 17-year-old.
70. Sorry, 70.
But yes, no, absolutely.
Freudian slip there?
no love lost between Ranieri and Mourinho, and it should be a fantastic game because, as you say, you know, Juventus are playing very well at the moment.
It'll be rubbish. We both know that. Nice one, Paolo. Thank you very much for that indeed. If you want Paolo to stick around, your votes count.
and don't keep him in just out of pity, in the way John Sargent keeps getting voted in.
That's Strictly Come Dancing. I know that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nice one. Excellent.
Vote for the Italian news, not the personality behind the Italian news.
Wise word, Barry. Thanks a lot, Paolo.
See you later.
Cheerio. Marcelo Moro Araujo has now joined us, and very shortly you're going to be telling us all about the exciting Scotland-Argentina game on Wednesday.
That's right.
Excellent. We'll also be hearing about England's trip to Berlin to play Germany. First, though, quick mention for a couple of posts. Villa Support Group has announced his retirement from posting.
It's like Andy Cole announced his retirement. Who cares?
Except more important.
A valued member of the blogging community.
Yeah, but still,
announcing your retirement, it's a bit
posting.
Pompous.
I have to say, Villa Support Group, much though I've enjoyed your post, I think you did jump the shark in classic Wenger fashion yourself. There, Hey Hey Habib comes in with lots of puns on the burnt toast thing. But nice one there. Black, white
is
and grey.
Is that Habib or Habib as in Sunday, Monday, Habib Bay?
Oh, I don't know. Black, white and grey, hello to you in New Zealand. Many thanks for your update on the Women's Under-17 World Cup, in which, was it North Korea beat? I didn't quite understand this. I think it was North Korea beat America. Amazing stuff. What?
How is that amazing? Under-17 girls football.
Are very, very good by, you know, yeah. It's a well-known fact.
North Korea beating America. It just has an interesting kind of geopolitical kind of...
It's
context.
Absolutely amazing.
I think so. Now, Marcella, you've waited long enough. Tell us about Scotland-Argentina. Maradona first off given a hero's welcome when he flew in.
Well, yes, they love him in Scotland, don't they? They really do. I think for him also it's kind of an emotional moment. I remember watching a documentary which he ended off by toasting an Irish crew, I think, Northern Irish crew. He had a drink and toasted to the camera saying, this one's for Scotland, and this is a toast to Wales, and this is a toast to Ireland. And then he said, both islands, in a kind of...
He just liked to have a drink, basically. Huh?
Probably. But I think, you know, there was no toast to England, and that wasn't lost on me and possibly other acute observers of the British geopolitical divisions. It's very good, though, that he's there. I mean, we've been kind of discussing whether it's going to be a disaster or not for some time now. And I think following the Barry Glendening school of thought, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt until he does a proper public outburst. And what
he's
I hear...
He's not done badly, threatening to walk out, wasn't he? Did he actually threaten to walk out?
Apparently not. He said... yesterday he gave an interview to a small group of Argentinian journalists who were there, And they were all three very, very impressed with the fact that he said 5:30 and at 5:29 he was ready waiting for them. And he said he has not threatened to walk out. He would consider that disrespectful to his daughters. He's let them down often enough in life, and he owes it to them to give this a good go.
So, he's also let down his son as well, hasn't he, by sort of basically disowning him or refusing to acknowledge him. But
one of his sons. How many, did he have more than one?
I don't know, James. How can we know about men and fatherhood properly?
Well,
I mean,
DNA
really?
Testing. That's how they nailed him on Diego Armando Maradona Jr.
No, this one boy, yes, yeah. But who's whether there's any
bizarrely went for a trial with River, didn't he? Did that go anywhere? Because that's the other club to Daddy's club, Boca.
Yes, it was a kind of very overt provocation, wasn't it, to be photographed with a River shirt. I mean, Diego Maradona is Argentinian, but above all, a Boca man. Mm. He also did some trials in Italy, I think, and
Diego Armando Maradona?
The young one.
Yeah, the young junior. Well, he was in Italy's under-17 side, I think, when he was only about 15. And I remember going to Coverciano, the training ground, when he was there, and we all got a little bit of a chat with him, and he was, you know, everyone was getting very excited. He then went into Napoli, and basically they realised that although he does look enormously like Daddy, he didn't have the right stuff. So they farmed him out on loan to various places. And last I heard, he was in the third division. And you know, now he's turned up for a trial at River, which does seem very strange.
But going back to Dad, he was upset last week because the head of the Argentinian FA wouldn't let him appoint his choice of number two. And I think that's fair enough, because surely he should be allowed to point whoever he wants.
Has he given any indication of what sort of football he wants to play? Is it like give it to the little guy in the middle and get him to run rings around everyone?
What he said in this first kind of pronouncement yesterday, which he did start by saying this is just a few thoughts because there's nothing really to say yet, is that this first game this week in Scotland, the friendly, he's just wants to get a sense, a change of attitude, and give the players a sense of leadership and knowledge that they can do it. He doesn't want to see them walking around the pitch like they did against Chile. That's disrespectful to the history of the Strip. He also talked a little bit about the role he would like Messi to play in the future. He's been talking to Messi in Spain, but Messi is not going to be there.
He's not.
This week. Apparently not, although it's confusing because
he has been released by Barca.
Released by Barca, and the commentary last night during the Barca game was Guardiola is not worried about Messi's fitness should he play on Wednesday, but he's definitely not in Scotland.
Oh.
As we speak. I don't know if he's arriving later. But Maradona spoke of Messi's role and Riquelme's role, who's also not there. And he also said, we need a team that can perform without Messi or Riquelme. Obviously, they're going to be crucial in the long run. Riquelme's going to be the number 10, but we've got to be able to do it without them as well. And generally has a kind of aura about him of seriousness, of, I wouldn't say humility, but, you know, down to the ground, matter of fact. So we'll see.
We certainly will. I think there'll be a lot of interest in that game. And naturally, because, you know, Scotland there as well. Kenny Miller, Stephen Fletcher, Darren Fletcher, Craig Gordon, all out for Scotland. So should be an interesting one, that. Raphael Honigstein, meanwhile, in Berlin, Germany hosting England.
Yes, they are.
Mm. Are they any good, Germany?
Well, the Germany that's going to come out to play England, I think, is very much going to be resembling the Germany that played at Wembley, i.e. it's going to be a string of youngsters and second-raters, I'm afraid. There's a lot of people have pulled out. And I think between Löw and Capello, there's almost a sort of implicit agreement that this is going to be a friendly and we're just going to experiment. And if anyone of us loses, no one will lose face because we'll have just experimented and played the second string of team members. So I think it's going to be very disjointed, very messy game. I don't think it's going to be a real, true reflection of either Germany or England.
Watch the Argentina game instead. That's the
That's what I'll be doing. I'll be going to Glasgow.
The obvious question that we always have in these is, what is the point of playing these matches?
They're money,
just a
of
complete
course.
Waste of time.
Right.
Players aren't interested. Media aren't interested. Fans pretty much aren't interested. No, why play them?
I think players are interested sometimes, depending on the game, no?
Is that so not why they all get injured just before them and then manage to recover for the weekend afterwards?
What I mean, the Scotland-Argentina game is probably worth tuning into because of the circus surrounding Maradona and, you know, but and maybe a lot of Argentinian players will be trying to impress him because they all worship him, Maradona the footballer. But I really just, England's friendly against Germany, Ireland playing during the week.
And who are they playing, right?
Poland. Huh. And I mean, they've had a load of withdrawals as well from their squad. It's just it's a total waste of everyone's time.
The problem is, of course, that you almost cannot afford to take this game too seriously because, A, there isn't the traditional week break this time, so you're coming straight off the back of club games and going into club games straight away afterwards. So you're always going to get people pulling up. But at the same time, it's the last friendly before the friendlies start again, I think, the end of February,
the
even March.
Yeah.
I think there might be one friendly in February,
really? Okay.
and then March. So it's a long time. So if you go into a game and say, this is going to be a great, important game, but then don't deliver, then you're going to have a real air of negativity hanging around you and your squad for 2 to 3 months. So I think there's almost a sort of the easy way out is just say, oh, we're just going to experiment. Well, we don't care about the result. We'll just see what happens.
In Argentina's case, though, Marcelo, is that the attitude, or is there so much expectation now to see what Diego's going to produce?
No, well, I think it's true what Raf is saying. It's a difficult kind of midweek in the middle of tournaments and matches. The Argentinian league is busily kind of fighting over the first position. So of course there will be enormous expectation, and it's a huge, huge money spinner. The TV are there in full force with all their proper kind of syndication deals and international rights brokering. Certainly for the game on Wednesday, he said, I just want them to go out there to feel they can do it, to change it. It's a click, the famous click, he said, click in their attitude and have a sense of someone guiding them and leading them. And I have a lot of experience in international football. I wouldn't be surprised if he feels comfortable, if it works, and if this new Maradona that we're seeing, who turns up on time and is very serious and committed, suddenly thinks, the modern football industry is full of scientific improvements that we could apply to Argentina.
Magnificent. Well, there you go. They're facing Scotland on Wednesday, the start of a new era. Many, many, many thanks to Marcella for popping in today, and Rafa, and Barry, and Paul, and producer Pete. As ever, that wraps it up for Football Weekly. Football Weekly Extra will return on Thursday, so hopefully you'll be joining us for that. Goodbye.